Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
So the first A-plus skill is affection. Does your child know how to give and receive love? Do they feel loved in real life?
This is Focus on the Family Minute with Arlene Pellicane.
The next one is appreciation. Do they say thank you? Or do they say, I want more, or I want the yellow one? Or, you know, you give your kid an iPhone and they're like, this isn't the latest one, you know. So gratitude, are they grateful? Anger management, your kid is going to get mad. Do they know how to manage it? Can they tell when they are being mad over a true injustice, or they're just mad because they didn't get their way? Apology, can your child apologize and mend a relationship? And the last one, attention, can your child take their wandering attention and listen to that teacher, listen to that pastor, read that book assignment? You know, kids, more than ever, they do not know how to pay attention.
Hear more from Arlene today about managing technology at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Get ready to throw down Friday and Saturday nights at the Tattoo Palace Casino Resort, because we're taking it back to the playground with Richie's Rock, Paper, Scissors. Two lucky winners get selected every hour from 5 to 8 p.m. for a chance to win $1.5 million in cash. Every 100 points earns you a ticket into the drawing. See TattooPalace.com for complete details. So what are you waiting for? It's $1.5 million, baby!
You know that reaction that people have on TV when they get to the newly remodeled bathroom? That wow moment is key when it comes to loving your remodel. Hi, this is Brian Carroll from A1 Glass, where we pride ourselves on providing our customers and contractors with shower enclosures that wow and last. No matter your taste or budget, A1 Glass has all of the top-of-the-line shower enclosures. Plus, our showroom is filled with options, so you can see it for yourself. A1 Glass, for all your glass needs.
H.M. Holloway, family-owned and operated for over 85 years, the leading producer of gypsum and other soil amendments in Central California. The Holloway Red Ribbon Service puts farmers, family, soil, and community first. So put the Red Ribbon Service from H.M. Holloway to work for you. It's a trusted name with farmers for over 85 years. Visit their website, hmholloway.com, or call the Paso Robles office, 805-369-2000.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. In the middle of the night, a French soldier standing in the dark street, standing knocking at the door of a dry goods store, the Farina Brothers establishment. By the way, you're in a city in western Germany during the mid-18th century. Wartime accounts for the presence of the French soldier. And the Farina brothers, well, both of them were named Johann. One was Johann Maria, the other Johann Baptist. The brothers came to Germany from Italy early in the century, started selling silk goods in 1709. 2 decades passed, the Farina brothers' enterprise grew. By then, Johann Maria had begun making a strange potion from a secret formula. And as a way of expanding the family business, he began selling the potion. Aqua Admirabilis, he called it. Even after the Farina brothers passed away, their dry goods business survived, and so did the secret formula. Oh, now where were we? Oh, yes, a French soldier. He's standing in the doorway of that same dry goods store in the middle of the night. He's banging on the door. The proprietor is asleep in the back, gropes his way through the darkness, answers the knock. What is it? He asks the Frenchman. And the Frenchman, struggling with the German language, tells the shopkeeper the rest of the story. That back in camp, one of his comrades is ill, very ill, maybe even Black Death, the plague. The soldier had heard, however, that a certain establishment in the city sells a potion for the plague, a remedy which renders the mysterious malady harmless to those yet unaffected. The proprietor nods. The soldier has indeed come to the right establishment. There is a supply of the formula already mixed. The soldier may take it with him now if he wishes. He does. And he does. And for months to come, similar transactions will be conducted at the Farina Brothers shop. There will be more French soldiers and other foreign troops as well. For these were the years of the Seven Years' War, one of history's more incredible conflicts. It eventually involved France and England and Russia and Prussia and Austria and Germany and even Spain and Sweden and Bohemia. That city in western Germany was visited by a great many foreign troops, most of whom sooner or later were apprised of the Farina Brothers' infection-fighting elixir. It was the French, however, who praised the anti-plague formula most enthusiastically, and those French soldiers carried its reputation back with them to France. As to whether the secret preparation was really effective in combating any disease, who can say? Perhaps some of the ingredients proved lethal to some bacteria. But the fact is, what began as medicine survived the centuries as something, well, something other than medicine. For this was one potion which future generations would consider undrinkable and yet no less effective. And it was named after the city in western Germany where it was first concocted by the Farina brothers. And it was used to ward off the Black Death. Today we use it to be more attractive to one another. And it's still named for that German city, Cologne. That's right, Eau de Cologne. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And today I have Josh Friedman in the studio or on the phone. Josh and I are talking about a number of things. First, we were talking about some of the issues with the airport land use issue, Jan Marks, Adam Hill over in the city of SLO. But the big thing that's going on right now, I think the biggest news in the world this week was the attack in Kiev. Russia, they believe it was a cruise missile. The UN has said they believe it was likely a cruise missile, and that they say it appears that it was targeted at a children's hospital. They have the major children's hospital in the whole country where children with cancer and really major issues go, was bombed a couple days ago. Josh was in Kiev at the time of the attack. Now, Josh, what did it sound like from where you were at?
Well, it wasn't just the sound of the missile striking the children's hospital complex that was heard of that morning. I woke up to the sounds of lots of explosions. At the time, I think I thought I heard 20, 30, 40 different explosions, something like that, and almost all of them to me sounded like intercepts, meaning Ukrainian air defense intercepting incoming missile fire. But I have, let's say, an untrained ear, and I can't tell you with any certainty that that's indeed what I was hearing. And not too long after that, I found out that there were missiles that made it through, and actually, I believe, hit two hospitals or hospital complexes that morning, but the Children's Hospital, the Ochmadit or Ahmadit Children's Hospital, is the one that's gotten all the attention, and it was just a horrific scene.
What was it like? So you got dressed. I couldn't imagine getting up and getting dressed in the morning and hearing. What time was it? About what time of the day was it in Kyiv when this happened?
I think it was around 10 a.m., something like that. It was, which was different from a lot of the missile barrages in recent months, in that many of them had been overnight or early in the morning while before it was light out. It was light out for several hours when this missile barrage came in, and the barrage wasn't just fired at Kyiv, but Kyiv seemed to take the brunt of it. But there were strikes around the country, and from everyone I've spoken to here, this one just seemed much larger and more significant. The barrage as a whole, not just the strike on the Children's Hospital, much larger and more significant than recent missile barrages. I guess it had become kind of common for every couple weeks or so for Russia to send in a missile barrage, at least in this phase of the war. And I had arrived in Ukraine a little more than 2 weeks prior to this one, and I remember I was in Odessa, I believe 2 weeks to the day before this missile barrage, and that morning I didn't wake up to explosions. I might have even slept through it, but I got up that morning in Odessa a couple weeks prior, and I did see some smoke from one of the airstrikes. And likewise, on Monday, 2 days ago, I saw smoke in the sky, plenty of smoke in the sky, before I headed over to the Children's Hospital complex.
And when you got over to the Children's Hospital complex, tell me what you saw.
At first, and granted, I didn't get there immediately. I guess a couple hours had passed, maybe even a little more, since the strike. By the time I got over there, I had to get through. I couldn't head over there immediately, but once I finally got a ride to go over there, there was a traffic jam. And I saw ambulances and could hear ambulances all over the city rushing in that direction for hours, I'd say. And there was all this traffic over there, but eventually I walked over to the actual hospital complex and then onto the complex. And at that point, I think everyone who was very seriously injured or in critical condition had already been whisked away in ambulances. But nonetheless, it was a very tough scene to take in. There was debris all over the place. The air quality was horrible. There were people handing out masks. Maybe I should have taken one. But at the same time, it was almost inspiring to see it seemed like a spontaneous effort, but a very communal effort. There were so many people, both soldiers, but more so civilians, who showed up and were going into the buildings, climbing up flights of stairs, going in and out of windows, and grabbing debris, hauling it out of the building, tossing it out of the building, lines of civilians, one by one, passing debris to one another to make piles of debris. And there were medical workers at the scene, and suddenly a generator truck would pop up, and a food truck would pop up, and girls were walking around handing out water bottles and snacks. It was pretty inspiring to see how civilians and how the community responded to it, but at the same time, I was walking around a children's hospital complex that had essentially been wrecked, and there were casualties, and for hours, I still saw, I guess they were firefighters hosing down this one building that was destroyed or closing down the wreckage of it. I guess some of that building might have, I guess some of that building is still standing. But yeah, I saw that area being hosed down for hours and debris all over the place, people tossing debris out of windows, horrible air quality, as I mentioned. It's tough to take in knowing that it's a children's hospital that had just been hit with direct impact by a missile.
And that's what the news reports from the UN say, that the report shows this was directly aimed at the hospital. And I'm going to, this is just something I'm going to add. I'm watching the media report on this in not the same fervor as when they're actually going after, they ask people to leave a hospital in Gaza, and then they have to go in because they have the military for the terrorists hiding in the hospital, and the media is just fervent that this is a horrible thing, that they would ever go after a hospital. But I don't see the same fervor when it comes to Ukraine for some reason, and I don't know why. I do see support. I see international massive support for Ukraine going on. Josh, have you seen, you were there right after the war started. Has the attitude of the people in Kiev changed since you were there about 2.5 years ago?
This is my third time in Kiev during the war, and each time has been different than the others. When I was first here at the beginning of the war, it was 2 weeks after the war had begun, it was a totally different situation where almost all businesses were closed. It really felt like martial law. At that time, there was essentially a battle for the city going on. There was essentially a battle for Kiev going on. I'm hearing the fighting was on the outskirts of the city, not really within the city limits. But I wasn't certain that the Ukrainians were going to hold Kiev or hold the entire city. The fighting had gotten right up to the city limits, particularly on my final day when I was here at that early period in the war. I couldn't get back into Irpin, where I'd done some reporting, and there are a lot of famous scenes. A lot of famous shots, particularly of the bridge that was blown out there and all the refugees walking, trying to get out of the city, trying to get out of Irpin, which is an adjacent city to Kiev. So at that point, the situation in Kiev was quite desperate, and so many people had fled the city. Well, now a lot of people have come back, and to some extent, the people here are going about their everyday lives, and they've got their routine. Yeah, it's different than pre-war. You've got power outages all the time, and obviously there are missile strikes sometimes and air raid sirens going off a lot. But right now it's summertime. People are out in the streets. The mood, the feeling is entirely different than it was at the beginning of the war. But that's not to say that it's a great situation. Now it's not, as evidenced by what happened on Monday.
And when you say, do you find the Ukrainians more united against Russia than they were at the beginning of the war? Or do you see it still split with some people supporting Russia? And Josh, we're going to get a word from our sponsor and come back and have you answer that question.
What little Russia support there is in this country is not very effective.
We'll be back with more with Josh Friedman after a word from our sponsors.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Claman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Record highs again today on Wall Street for NASDAQ and the S&P 500. NASDAQ up 218 points to end the day at 18,647. The S&P 500 57 points higher at 5633. The Dow closed 429 points higher, adding 200 points in the final minutes. Traders encouraged by Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's second day of congressional testimony, today telling the Senate Banking Committee the Fed has made considerable progress toward the goal of 2% inflation, but he would not be pinned down on when the Fed may cut interest rates. The U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing new rules requiring mortgage servicing companies to prioritize helping borrowers who are having trouble paying their monthly mortgage payments instead of just foreclosing on them. Companies would generally be allowed to move ahead with foreclosure only after all possibilities to help have been exhausted. For the Fox Business Network, I'm Jack Callahan. Invested in you.
Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for health care can save the typical family $500 a month. And that's huge. But it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. So maybe you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're much happier with. Here's the number you need. 866-89-BIBLE. That's 866-89-BIBLE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs. Just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
When you need a plumber, chances are you need one right away. That's why Red's On-Time Plumbing is available 24/7 with same-day service. Red's On-Time Plumbing has a 5-star rating on Google. Get a great plumber and quick. If you're planning a project, Red's has convenient online booking and always gives free estimates. Ask about a $1,000 SoCal rebate on high-efficiency tankless water heaters. Schedule now at ontimeplumbingpro.com or call Red's On-Time Plumbing at 805-466-6188.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And today we're talking with Josh Friedman. Josh Friedman is actually in Kiev. He was in Kiev, Ukraine, when Russia attacked a children's hospital. They had a massive attack on the country. Since this war has been going on for 2.5 years, and basically it's been almost, it's one side takes a little bit for a while, and then the other side takes a little bit. There hasn't been a lot of movement. This attack on Monday was one of the bigger attacks, I'd say, in the last year and a half. Would you agree, Josh?
Yes, it was. Granted, I hadn't been here for about a year and a half, maybe slightly more than a year. Just about a year and a half since the last time. A year and a half ago was the last time I was here. But from everyone I've spoken to, as I alluded to earlier, I'm not so sure going back that long, but at least for months, they were saying that this is largest, most significant attack in months, or missile barrage in months. And to make matters worse, the children's hospital was struck.
And I find it very interesting. This happened right as in the day before a NATO summit in Washington, where the main topic is aid to Ukraine. Do you think this was done on? This has anything to do with the NATO summit?
Well, there's so many people with so many different theories and speculation about the issue. Clearly, there's reason to question the timing, but I don't think it helps Russia. If anything, it just makes it more clear that it makes it more clear at the NATO summit that Ukraine needs more air defense. Kyiv is supposed to be the... Kyiv is supposed to have the best air defense out of all cities or areas of the country. And nonetheless, this happened on Monday. So this might help Zelensky and Ukrainian officials make their case to NATO that they seriously need more air defense. But I can't tell you whether Russia was... I don't know what the Kremlin's reasoning was for this.
Well, according to Al Jazeera, they're saying that Russia is blaming the war on NATO and is demanding territory right now. We'll have talks. We can end this thing, but we need territory for talks. So that is, Al Jazeera published that today, that is the demand. Meanwhile, at the summit, the NATO summit, many countries are offering way more ammunition than they were, fighter jets, multiple things, and NATO is slamming China over supporting Russia. So there does appear to be a lot going on and a major push for talks and an end to this war.
Well, we'll see. I'm not too optimistic that this war is about to come to a conclusion.
I'm with you. I'm not saying it's going to come to a conclusion, but there is a push, and there are a lot of F-16s currently being promised to Ukraine from multiple countries at the summit. Following the attack on Monday, there have been some revenge attacks. Accordingly, the long-range drones into Russian territory in four cities. Do you know anything about that?
I have not looked into it too much. I've heard just the very basics. But Ukraine has had a lot of success striking inside of Russia, and that is a hot topic, particularly with regard to NATO and what the U.S. and NATO allies will tolerate. Pretty sure I heard there was a statement from the Pentagon earlier today. I need to check what it was, but I think I heard that, in a sense, that there's no new development in terms of leniency from the U.S. toward allowing various types of Ukrainian strikes within Russia.
There does appear, though, from what the news, worldwide news sources are saying, the drones being used by the Ukrainian military are far superior to the drones being used on Russia. And I'm going to give you knew Dennis and several other people. There's a number of companies in San Luis Obispo County. I think one is looking at moving over to the airport in Paso right now that are actually making drones for Ukraine right now. So there are a lot of the best military companies in the world out of the United States are selling, not this isn't being given. This is Ukraine directly purchasing drones from a company in San Luis Obispo County.
Well, I think also, interestingly, somewhat of a tangent, but maybe not so much, Turkish drones have been used in quite a few conflicts in recent years. I saw some of the effects of that in Armenia, going back to 2020 and the war that took place then between the 2020 Nagorno-Karabakh war between Armenians and Azerbaijan. But I believe those Turkish Bayraktar drones are, I think there's a deal in place for them to be manufactured in Ukraine. And not too long ago, when the tragedy happened in Iran, maybe not
maybe in the eyes of the Ukrainians, not a tragedy. But when the Iranian president's helicopter went down, and there was this search in the mountainous terrain and dense fog for the helicopter and the president's body and the bodies of the other people who were aboard, Iranian drones could not get the job done. And Iran actually let Turkey, which is a NATO member, fly a Turkish surveillance drone over sensitive sites in Iran in order to locate the crash site. But nonetheless, Iranian drones have wreaked havoc here in Ukraine. I've heard quite a few stories, personal anecdotes from people about that. And yeah, drones are doing damage on both sides of the conflict.
We have a text message from at 805-234-1703. You can send text messages. We have a text message. I believe we won the Cold War by running Russia out of money. Do you believe sanctions are helping with Russia currently?
Is that a question for me?
Yes.
I don't think they're having near the effect that it could be having. I think the sanctions regime could be a lot more intense.
You're fading out just a little bit. You were better a minute ago.
I don't think the sanctions are having the effect that they could be having. I think the sanctions regime could be a lot more intense, could be stricter enforced, but nonetheless, I wouldn't say that Russia is thriving economically, and much of the country is quite poor, so I don't think the sanctions are I don't think there being a sanctions regime is helping Russia, as some of the pro-Kremlin voices might claim, that that Russia's just taking the opportunity to pivot to other directions and that they're not impacted at all by the sanctions. I do think Russia is impacted by the sanctions, but I think the sanctions regime could be much stricter.
And how could they make them stricter? In which way?
Well, there's some talk about parts. There are all kinds of ways. There are a lot of countries that don't enforce sanctions on Russia. That's a big part of the world. Turkey's an interesting country. Turkey continues to do business with Russia, although militarily it supports Ukraine, and there are plenty of countries in what people refer to as the Global South and the East, the Middle East, who are totally against the sanctions regime, but nonetheless, even within the West, there are a lot of allegations that Western companies in the West, even American companies, manufacture parts that end up being used in Russian military technology. Issues like that are pretty common. They come up a lot. I know a lot of people say that the sanctions regime could be used to target the Russian oligarchs even more than it currently is. But I'm not an expert on sanctions and sanctions policy, so I don't know if I'm the one to say exactly what would be most beneficial for Ukraine.
And one of the things I was asking you about earlier, and we went to a break, was the idea that more and more people are, what we'd talked before, and at the start of the war, there were areas that supported rejoining, you know, there were people in the some of the outlying areas that supported Russia and supported becoming part of the Russian Empire again, and others that didn't. But are you seeing where that people are becoming more united that we are Ukrainian?
I think that's been going on for years. The support for Russia within Ukraine has really dwindled, and it's just, it's not visible walking around. And from what I hear and from my conversations with people and what's evident from being in Ukraine during the war is that the anger toward Russia, the anti-Russian sentiment has just been hardened so much by what transpired over the past 2.5 years. So many people are so angry, understandably, at Russia. And it goes well beyond just anger, to what extent there are pro-Russian sentiments in the country, which, again, they've been pretty minor. If you look at the elections going back years, the pro-Russian party's numbers have really dwindled, or really did dwindle, and there's been widespread support for an EU and NATO orientation, Western orientation for the country for years. But on top of that, you can also just look at, culturally speaking, and what's going on with the language issue here in Kyiv. I do still hear people speaking Russian, but increasingly people are speaking Ukrainian, and I think as time goes on, more and more of the country will be speaking Ukrainian. I think the younger generations are going to speak much more Ukrainian than the older generations, and the west of the country already pretty much all predominantly Ukrainian-speaking. But nonetheless, yes, I was just in Odessa, for instance, in day-to-day life. Most people are still speaking Russian in Odessa, but I do notice changes even there. If you go into a restaurant, you go into a business, granted, kind of been the law or common practice to be greeted in Ukrainian for years now, but I do hear more Ukrainian if I go into a restaurant or a business in Odessa than I used to, and here in Kyiv, I'm definitely hearing more Ukrainian and less Russian than in years before the war.
And what about the children and going to school? What is the day-to-day life? Do the children get up and go to school every day, or what is the daily life like for children in the country?
It's summer right now, so I don't know what they have in terms of summer schools. I'm not really sure. It looks and feels like summer. It's not all in terms of just day-to-day life, and I can't really speak to the kids' day-to-day life in terms of school right now, but I've been in Ukraine quite a few times in the past during summer, and walking around Kyiv and walking around Odessa, it actually reminds me a lot of years past prior to the war, with the main, I guess there being a few main exceptions, one being that obviously there are air raid sirens going off from time to time, occasionally there are missile strikes, and it's just, it's noticeable how few tourists and foreigners there are. Odessa in the summer, city that historically tourists have flocked to, and Kyiv to a large extent as well, even though it's not a coastal destination the way Odessa is. But at some times I feel like I'm the only foreigner. I know I'm not, but that much is different. But I do see many people going about their daily lives, their day-to-day lives. In that sense, it's totally different than it was at the beginning of the war. And I would say there's much more of a sense of normalcy now.
And when you went before the war and you would go into Odessa and some of the beach areas, and you were saying it used to be way more foreigners, am I correct that Odessa used to be a popular vacation spot for Russians?
I don't know how popular in recent years. I can't really speak to Soviet times and going back decades. In recent years, Russians have flocked more to Turkey, to Egypt, to Thailand.
We got about 5 seconds and we've got to take a break.
All right. Well, I guess we'll postpone that till after.
Okay.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Barry from Cambria says, quote, "Bill's presentation was great. He displayed an admirable depth of technical understanding of the system he was presenting. It was a pleasant experience. Thank you, Barry, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing 47 years of admirable displays of technical understanding. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, it's time to schedule your solar panel cleaning. Spring and summer are maximum solar energy production seasons. Dirty panels can decrease production by 20% or more. Make sure your panels produce the most energy and save you the most money. Visit solarponics.com to get your solar panel cleaning quote. While you're at it, ask us about battery backup and storage. Get more out of your solar energy system. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Elite RV and Boat Storage in Paso Robles is now open. They're not your typical open-air dirt lot. Elite RV and Boat Storage is fully fenced, fully paved, and each space is covered. Their state-of-the-art facility includes security and video cameras monitored 24/7 with motion detectors safeguarding every covered parking space. A professional RV wash station with spot-free rinse, vacuum station, trickle charging, air compressor, a dump station, propane, accessory store, and they offer free ice. Open 9 to 5, 7 days a week. Don't let your RV or boat get sun bleached, allow decal fading, or let it deteriorate in the dust.
Hi, this is Kit. Trust your RV and boat to locally owned and operated Elite RV and Boat Storage at 4210 Right Way off of Dry Creek Road next to the Estrella Warbirds Museum. Call Elite RV and Boat Storage at 805-801-3889 or online at EliteRVandStorage.com. Ask about a free month.
This Friday at Vintage Community Templeton, clean comedian Dennis Gaxiola brings his unique, edgy, and family-friendly comedy to the North County.
Have a real mixed family. My nephew's Mexican and Jewish. He wants to get a car, but he's not sure if he should steal it or buy it wholesale.
Bring a chair, picnic, or purchase tacos and beverages at the event. Dennis Gaxiola, this Friday, 6:30 p.m. at 690 Peterson Ranch Road in Templeton. A great night of laughs and family fun. Admission and parking are free.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm the host of Sound Off on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. Tomorrow, we are going to have Aaron Lagos, I'm going to twist for her last name, a former Pismo Beach police officer who was violently attacked on the job. She could no longer work, and she has some concerns about the sentencing of the man who attacked her. And we will, again, have her on tomorrow afternoon. Today, I have Josh Friedman. He is currently in Kiev in Ukraine. And he is also has an apartment in Istanbul. And Josh, we were talking at the end of before the break about where Russians used to vacation before the war, but as someone who has an apartment in Istanbul, did you see a change in the amount of Russians coming to Istanbul after the war started?
Well, Russians have been flocking to Turkey for years. There are many Russians in Istanbul, but many Russians also just pass through Istanbul or visit Istanbul briefly, transit in Istanbul. To some extent, Russians have taken over the Mediterranean coastal city of Antalya in southern Turkey. But I guess most notably was when there was the big conscription fear. I think it was fall 2022, sometime around then, maybe September, October 2022, when there was announcements about conscription in Russia, and at that point there were so many people fleeing the country by air and by land. There were lines of cars, probably many people saw video footage of it, lines of cars trying to get into Georgia, trying to get into Kazakhstan. There were Russians flying in droves into Turkey, into Armenia, into Serbia, into Georgia and other countries. And many transited in Istanbul and then flew elsewhere. But yeah, at that point, I did see many, many, many Russians come into Istanbul, and they somewhat spread out from there, but still there are many Russians in Istanbul, and even before then there were many Russians in Istanbul. Although it seems like they gravitate more toward Antalya in general than Istanbul within Turkey.
Did it cause did rental rates go up as the conscriptions went in and more Russians came to the area? Did you notice an increase in housing cost?
There's been a massive increase in housing costs in Turkey and specifically in Istanbul over the past couple of years. And that's attributable in part to Russians, but not just Russians. But it's not just that there were Russians fleeing conscription or fleeing the war or fleeing what they might have perceived as tyranny or not a pleasant place to be. At the moment, a lot of Russian investment money has come into Turkey. There have been a lot of Russians investing in Turkish real estate, but there have been a lot of foreigners in general investing in Turkish real estate. It hasn't just been Russians flocking to Turkey and Istanbul.
So it's a pretty metropolitan city with people from all over the world.
Very much so, and many Turks, somewhat similarly to a lot of people who are frustrated with immigration in the U.S., many Turks have been very frustrated with the levels of immigration in Turkey and specifically in Istanbul, and that frustration is definitely not aimed primarily at Russians.
And is Turkey pretty good about how they treat foreigners coming to stay? Is it a pretty welcoming country?
That is a complex issue. I would not say they treat you very well as a foreigner if you're an Afghan migrant trying to walk across the border, for instance. There are many, many Turks who are very alienated with the mass migration that has come from Syria and across the Arab world as well as Afghanistan. Lots and lots of frustration and angry sentiments with regard to the millions of people who have come to Turkey in recent years or over the past decade, primarily from those regions. And yeah, I would say there are quite a few parallels, actually, to the anti-immigration sentiments in the U.S. And cost of living is a big part of that discussion or debate.
Is it, so it is similar to the border issues, our southern border, the issues in Turkey?
There are a lot of parallels. The Turkish border or borders, it's not just a single border. There's during the peak of the Syrian civil war, there 3, 4, 5 million people poured into Turkey from Syria. But I've seen myself Afghans and other nationalities who had just come across the border with Iran, interestingly. So the Turkish border was pretty wide open for quite a few years, and President Erdogan had a very, let's say, open and welcoming policy towards specifically Syrian refugees, but he has faced a lot of backlash over that in recent years, and Turkey has cracked down quite a bit on immigration.
So the same thing as it's going on in our country, you have people that they open the border and the public gets angry and they look at closing things up.
There are a lot of parallels. In a sense, you have somewhat of a reverse going on in that you could say the conservative party or the conservative government was mostly responsible and mostly made the decision to let in the migrants. So liberal and conservative over there might get a little confusing for Americans. The more liberal, more pro-Western secular party, or one might say half of the country, seems to have the more anti-immigration sentiments, or anti-immigration sentiments seem to be more pervasive on that side of the political aisle in Turkey. But it's really become widespread nationwide, the anti-immigration sentiment. It's not limited to one political side there.
And going back to Ukraine, there's reports right now from Voice of America, there's a major attack on Odessa, and that Ukraine has successfully downed 14 aerial drone strikes in the port of Odessa. Are you planning on staying in Kiev right now, or do you plan on going back to Odessa?
I just heard some thump, but I don't think that was an airstrike. I will definitely return to Odessa. I don't know exactly when. Odessa does not have as strong of air defense as Kyiv, so in a sense it is more vulnerable than Kyiv. And I have been in Odessa when airstrikes have taken place, but I was not there for this latest one. I don't know when I'll be back there. I would like to go to some cities closer to the front. I don't know how that would work out with my work schedule and the power and internet connectivity and whatnot. But right now, I'm just playing things by ear. But I will definitely be back in Odessa at some point, sooner rather than later.
And Josh, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to come on the air. I know it's... What time is it there right now?
It is 11:59 p.m., and my power is supposed to go out when the clock strikes midnight, but it might take a couple minutes after that.
Well, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to do this today, and it's great to have someone that's there in the area and to hear the human side of what is going on. Thank you, and again, I hope to have you back on again in the near future.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you for your interest in what's happening here.
This hour of Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL and 99.3 FM was brought to you by Farm Supply, serving your fencing, irrigation, and livestock needs since 1950. Farm Supply, for the farmer in you.
AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.